Now, school children around the country will, of course, be starting their two-month summer holiday soon. And for some of us, it conjures up those carefree memories, being left in your own devices to run wild and enjoy those long, hot summers we imagined we had back then. But of course, it is all changed now. And I know a lot of you out there are currently scrabbling around to find camps and activities to occupy the kids for summer. And I guess in general, kids' lives are probably a lot more organised and regimented these days. So, what pressures does this put on family? Joining me to discuss it is Rosaline McIlvany, clinical psychologist and a lecturer in psychotherapy in DCU. So, Rosaline, it is that time where we frantically think, how can I fill in the boxes for the 2 months over the summer holidays, particularly working parents? Are these camps that kids go to, are they a good idea, do you think?
Well, I think in general they're a good idea. I guess it has increased a lot in recent years, hasn't it? I mean, I'm just thinking, like, even 20 years ago there was an odd camp here and there, and it has really increased in terms of, I suppose, the demands on parents who are working and children wanting to sign up to camps and wanting, you know, to be doing all different things, etc., all summer. I think it's all about balance. You know, I think intrinsically the camps are a good idea. They're very much geared towards children having fun, you know, exposing them to new activities. It's a great learning opportunity, not just in terms of new skills, but also meeting new kids, you know, relating with new children, new opportunities, and that's all really, really good. I suppose the downside of it is, and that's, you know, one of the things I suppose that parents have concerns about is, you know, all this structured time that we're organising for children, is that good if it's too much of it?
Because they do hit the end of the school year and they are generally exhausted.
They're
at
exhausted
that point.
And there is a reason why the schools don't run the whole 12 months of the year. There's a reason why there's summer holidays. And part of that is that, you know, children need that downtime, all of that structure and intensity in terms of learning in the classroom, even though I think, in fairness now, primary schools nowadays are very different to they were certainly when I was in school. There's a lot more play built into, there's a lot more unstructured time built into the school day. But it is very intense. And as you say, kids are exhausted by the time the beginning of the summer comes, and they need some downtime to kind of just hang out, relax, and be able to... I mean, I think the whole thing about that unstructured time is that, you know, I remember when my kids would say to them, I'm bored, you know, and I'd say, I'm delighted, I'm thrilled that you're bored, and it's just to drive them around the bend.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted them to be bored, because if you're bored, you can actually think about, well, what could I do? How could I occupy myself without everything being done for me? So I think that kind of very...
Have we timetabled and structured life too much for kids now? Because you'll meet kids, like, and they have more than one activity every day. They come home, do their homework, off to activities, and, you know, there are timetables up on fridges all over the country.
Yes.
I guarantee you, of Monday to Friday, everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Is it a bit too much?
I think it is a bit too much, and I think we have to ask, where is it coming from? You know, is it our kind of drive to really be better parents all the time, that we want to be the absolute best and we want our children to have the absolute best opportunities at everything? You know, I think there is a bit too much of children being exposed to too many different things and too many different activities, and not enough, you know, downtime, chilling out, and as I said, having the opportunity to get bored, to kind of think for themselves and initiate things for themselves.
Yeah, I guess in terms of play and how we do it, even play has become a bit more structured now, hasn't it? Like,
you know,
I mean, it's a cliche, but, you know, you were kicked out on the road years ago, and, you know,
you had to get on with it with
the others, and you interacted
and you
did
made
stuff.
Up your games, and you made up wonderful games. And when I'm thinking of, you know, children who put on plays just for themselves, who dress up, who, you know, create their own games, they don't get as much opportunity to do that because, you know, I do think part of it is because parents are working so much, and, you know, they need to have their children in a safe place where they're being minded and things are being then automatically structured, because it's easier to do that. I think, you know, the children who have the opportunity to kind of go out, play with the pals on the green or whatever, where, you know, there isn't any structure put on it, I think that is really good for them, and maybe there isn't enough of that.
Now, you talk about downtime and then you talk about play. Is downtime is a slightly different concept, is it?
I think for some children, downtime might be play. But I guess, you know, if children are with other children, for instance, that can actually be quite intense. and it can be very demanding. You know, you have to be able to relate to others. You have to, you know, be considerate to others. You have to share with others, etc. So for some children, I think downtime is playing. And for other children, downtime is actually maybe just peace on their own and just left to their own devices and not having any demands put on them. Not that they have to do anything, even if the having to do something is play.
Yeah.
So I would distinguish between them, but I do know that for many children, the downtime is play. It's a different kind of play, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we can sometimes tend to be very judgmental around, you know, kids and devices or watching TV or whatever. But I think sometimes if a kid has been out there interacting loads and everything, come back and stick your nose in an iPad for half an hour.
That can be downtime. You know, they're left to their own devices. They're left alone. They enjoy it. Because I do think, you know, it's about what they get pleasure out of. You know, it is really important to enjoy life and have opportunities to do things.
Have we all become a bit hard on ourselves and the kids, like that everybody has to be relentlessly doing the right thing and improving themselves all the time? And
Having to be better.
Now, I suppose we're talking there more about smaller kids. In terms of teenagers then and the notion of play and everything, I suppose there's still an idea of play, but it probably takes on different forms.
It looks different. And even as adults, you know, we need to play and that looks different as well. So, yeah, I guess for teenagers and adolescents, it's really kind of hanging out together. It's doing things together that they enjoy doing. Or indeed, as you said, doing things on your own that you enjoy doing. But I guess the balance is really important. I think there can be a danger in those teenage years of, you know, avoiding the challenge of interacting with others, for instance. You know, it can be much easier to kind of stay in the room, stay in the bedroom, playing the games, you know, online or whatever, and not engaging and not interacting with others. And that's where they might need a little bit of guidance and a little bit of a kick sometimes. And so like, get out there and, you know, ring your friend or make contact or send a message out. Is anybody doing anything today? So I think, again, it's the balance. But I do think that in the teenage years, you know, young people are more socially self-conscious.
Okay, so it becomes riskier for them.
It does, because there's a, you know, if you put a message out that you want to do something and they don't want to do it, there's a rejection. So I think they're a little bit more sensitive in those teenage years and they need a little bit more support around it in terms of navigating, making contact, wanting to do things, because there can be, as I said, that tendency to just, it's so much easier to just stay at home and do nothing and not, you know, get up of your backside and get out.
But as well as prodding them then, I presume you're moving into a stage then when you want to start giving them more autonomy as
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, it's like walking a tightrope, isn't it? You want to kind of push a little bit from behind. You don't want to put too much pressure on. You want to give them the opportunity to find things that they can do for themselves and to give that little bit of, as you say, autonomy and independence. And I don't think, you know, for some young people, it just happens naturally. And all parents really have to do is follow and be there for them and guide and whatever. And then for other young people, they need help with it. It doesn't come from within themselves. They need more guidance. They need more. It's like parents have to watch for opportunities like, okay, could I let them go and do that themselves now instead of automatically bringing them because it's easier and because, you know, sometimes parents forget that they have to change as the children get older. The parents have to adapt and very consciously step back a bit and say, okay, actually, there's an opportunity where I could let them do that for themselves and it would be really good for them. And even if they make a hames of it and it all, you know, it's not the end of the world. So it's like taking risks that are not too risky, not too dangerous.
And you calibrate it, don't you?
Exactly.
And you let the string a little bit longer each time.
Opportunities, they build the confidence and the parents build confidence and then you can take a little bit more of a risk the next time.
Because the parents need confidence in this situation.
I mean, a lot of it is the parents having difficulty letting go and a parent's worrying about will they be able for it and, oh my goodness, should they never be able to manage that on their own?
Tell me about immature dependency and moving to mature dependency.
Yeah, well, I was saying this, that, you know, when we talk about independence and autonomy, Donald Furbin is a psychoanalyst and his kind of theory of human development, I just love the phrase he talks about, we move all of us from immature dependency to mature dependency. So the idea is that we're always dependent. We always need other people. We need people to help us. We need people to support us, etc. So it's, you know, we're in terms of our lifelong path, we're never aiming to be completely independent. We always need people. So I think that idea of in teenagers, particularly when you're trying to encourage independence, it's not an independence where you abandon them. You know, you have to be very much there for them to be able to give them the lift or give them the bit of pocket money if they need it or whatever. But it's I suppose, acknowledging that it's important to be both dependent and independent. If you're not able to be dependent, then you won't, it'll impact on your relationships and your ability to form relationships. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, in relationships, we need each other and we have to be able to lean on each other.
But without leaning too much.
Without leaning too much. It's trying to get that balance, isn't it?
I was reading an interview with, Gabor Maté. It was fantastic.
I was at a conference a few weeks ago and he was one of the keynote speakers.
Really, yeah. He's super, isn't he?
Yeah.
But he makes the point about teenagers that, you hear people say, they say it particularly, I think, about daughters in my experience, or maybe this is just because what I hear because I have daughters, but they say, she hit a certain age and bang, she was gone from me for 10 years, didn't really. I know they come back around. He makes the point that it's not okay to let children be reared by their peers, that you need to parent strongly during the teenage years because you're a parent.
The studies that have been done where they've spoken to teenagers and asked them about their relationship with their peers and their parents, those teenagers come back and say, we need our parents. We need our parents to be there. We just need them in a different way. So I completely agree. I mean, sure, the peer, they're kind of wandering around in the darkness trying to figure life out. They're all in the same boat. And they need adults to be able to guide them and support them and kind of stay at a little bit of a distance, but very much stay, very much be present.
I do notice
even
as well
if they don't want you.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That's the tricky bit.
Yeah.
I notice what some people do as the kids get into teen years is find a thing they can do together.
Yes.
So it's not like let's sit down and have a conversation about where you're at, but like let's go for a run or...
Yeah, because the sitting down having a conversation is probably too intense. It's too much kind of in your face. They need the distance. So absolutely finding an activity that they enjoy and trying to negotiate that. Because it's also, I think, important as a parent that you're not constantly doing things that the kids enjoy that the children want to do and you don't get any pleasure out of it. So it's really important to find something that you both get pleasure out of, because young people know when their parents are only doing it to go through the motions. They know that the parent is not enjoying it. So it's really important to find something that you have in common, and if you look hard enough you'll find something.
Yeah.
They are your children.
Where do you stand on that? We mentioned briefly the phones and iPads earlier, but obviously it's a huge concern with a lot of parents. You know, parents will tell you, I had the nicest kid and he's mad into sport and very outgoing and everything. Mm-hmm. And since he got a phone, 2 hours every evening, his nose stuck in it, not talking to us and not interacting and all that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the way the technology is developed is kind of, you know, potentially addictive. I mean, that's what it's about. They're developed in such a way that they want to get your attention and keep it and reward you. And, you know, I have this app for learning Spanish and, you know, I get all these messages. Well done. Five in a row. Yeah. Whoa, aren't you fantastic? You know, but they're designed that way. So, you know, you have to battle that. That is what you're battling. That is what you're dealing with. And you need to accept it.
So we need rules and regulations around it?
Yeah, I mean, we have rules and regulations around everything else that the children do. Why not in terms of phone use or access to phones or technology? And again, it's all about moderation, isn't it? Because there are wonderful benefits to be had from the whole kind of online world. But there are also difficulties and dangers. They have to be managed.
Now, of course, we want to talk about the other side of this equation as well, which is the poor parents. And I do think, in a way, that this time of year, the parents who work outside the home do start feeling very guilty because they're viewing the kids as my kids are now a problem to be dealt with for the summer. And they don't want to feel that way, but there is terrible guilt around it, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think I was saying guilt is kind of an occupational hazard when you're a parent. You have to kind of put up with a certain amount of it. But, it's something about not letting the guilt get in the way and not letting it drive how you parent and how you organise time for your children, that it's not too driven by guilt. And I do think, you know, that thing of finding interests that you have in common with them, creating opportunities where you can have fun together, where you can have do things as a family or whatever. You know, it isn't about being at home all day. Like if you were at home, they probably wouldn't want you in their face. They just need you in the background. So it's really about trying to see, can you give them the same opportunities as you could if you were at home, but without necessarily, you know, imposing too much on them. Give them a little bit of choice in the matter.
And are parents missing out too, though, on time with the kids and on all that bonding time?
I think that depends, doesn't it? It varies from one family to another, because lots of parents spent loads of time with their children. And as I said, it's not as if they were at home all day that they'd be spending all that time with their children. The children need to be spending time with other children. They need to be spending time on their own. They're not kind of playing with mummy and daddy all day.
And indeed, like, there's another side to this, which is that I often wonder if my generation and younger, are we kind of overparenting the children at this stage?
I think there's a lot more awareness now about children's emotional development and the impact that we have on them as their parents. So because we know that, we take it, you know, for the most part, I think we take it more seriously. We feel more responsible for it. But, you know, there's a lot of factors involved in what impacts on children's development. Parents are part of it, but they're not all of it. And so having this idea of doing too much and constantly wanting to be the best.
This project that I have to do.
Can create difficulties as well, because where do the children have the freedom and the space to get away from their parents then and not be their project and develop their own project for themselves?
And of course, part of what you identified earlier as well is that a lot of this is the parents' fear, like, say, about letting the kids be a little bit more independent. Yeah. Is there this increased, and you'd wonder, is it always actually justified, anxiety around letting the kids out into the world or around, you know, letting them walk to school on their own or letting them go to the shops or whatever?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously my background is very much in child protection, and I think, you know, sometimes I hear people saying, oh, you know, we're far too protective of children nowadays. Personally, I don't think there's such a thing as being too protective of children, but sometimes parents can hold children back in terms of them developing their independence. That's not protection. That's actually, you know, impeding their development, hindering their development. So I think parents have to deal with their own anxiety. I think it's not healthy to be putting that anxiety on children.
No, and it's very contagious, isn't
it? Very,
like,
the
slightest mood or tone of voice, they pick up, don't they?
Yeah, you know, I remember going to a paper. There was a study of children who were experiencing anxiety, and instead of seeing the children, they decided they'd see the parents, and they ran a group for parents. They measured the anxiety in the children at the beginning and the end of the programme and found significant improvements in the children's anxieties. The children were never seen for any kind of intervention. With the parents that we're seeing. So we have a thing going on there around anxiety, is that it is, as you say, very contagious.
Can I ask you finally, Rosaline, all this generation who are over-parenting and the kids are the major project in their lives and everything, what happens then when the kids are gone? You know, if you're in a marriage that is essentially an agreement based on bringing up children and they're the centre of it all, and then the kids are gone.
Guess you need another project. It's a bit like that old empty nest thing. You need to find new ways of channeling your energy and then also kind of, you know, in the marriage, there's just the two of you left there looking at each other. What are you going to do now? You have to find new activities. You have to find new things that you do together that are not centred around the children.
Yeah. Okay. Rosaline McIlvany, thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
All very interesting. And we'll take a break.